Today is January 27th, 2006, and this is the TMO to Go Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. Hey, everybody, it's nearly the end of January. So, a quick request before we begin. If you haven't already, please head over to Podcast Alley and vote for the show. We'd really appreciate it. You can find the link at macobserver.com/roundup. We've got so much new stuff this week, a new logo, a new feature segment. I can barely contain my excitement. Let's get right to it. Oh, and since there's no other good place to do it during the show, I'll just point out that Apple stock got hammered this week. It closed at $72.03 a share. Now, this week we're going to debut a totally new segment on the show. I've always found that the thing most lacking from news coverage, no matter what the source, is context. News always gets presented as though every story carries equal weight. Now, to fix that, we've built the TMO context machine. You'll see exactly how it works in just a minute. But first, let's do the news. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. Our top story this week, Steve Jobs on the Walt Disney Board of Directors. Late last week and early this week, we were reporting that Disney was nearing a decision to purchase Pixar Animation Studios, the other firm of which Steve Jobs is CEO. The proposed deal, which was officially announced Tuesday, does not involve Apple Computer. Disney does, however, have ties with Apple. Disney owns many television networks, including ABC, which sells video programming through the iTunes Music Store. The deal, by the numbers, values Pixar at $7.4 billion U.S. The acquisition will be an all-stock transaction. Each share of Pixar stock will be purchased with 2.3 shares of Disney stock. Steve Jobs owns some 60% of Pixar and will receive a seat on Disney's board of directors. The full story, including a detailed look at the history between Disney and Pixar, is at macobserver.com/roundup. Next up, a tough week in the press for iTunes competitors. These days, it's become pretty hard to muster anything other than a tone of, well, obviously, when good press surfaces about iTunes. This week, the list includes new video additions to the iTunes Music Store, this time from Comedy Central, an update to the iTunes U program that lets universities distribute class materials through the store, and a handful of laudatory comments and articles from ABI Research, Research and Markets, and Electronic News. The week was not so kind to several of Apple's competitors in the music space. Por ejemplo, the makers of the original MP3 player, Creative, reported Thursday that although revenue increased over the previous quarter, its net profits took a hit due to stiff competition from Apple and other MP3 player makers. Creative did see increased sales of its various products, and it was able to reduce inventory. We also ran a very interesting story that saying that Microsoft may attack the iPod head-on with a device that not only plays music and videos, but also games. The company hasn't decided whether or not it will go forward with such a product. The idea is to leverage the Xbox brand to create a portable media device, perhaps similar to Sony's PlayStation Portable. The consensus reaction in the media was that Microsoft would have an uphill battle in such an effort. And in the I told you so department, Napster just finished laying off about 10% of its workforce last week. The former employees were all released from the programming and marketing divisions. I mention this story because I started last week's show questioning whether the predictions of such layoffs made for a valid story. Apparently, it was. Mazel tov. And now, as promised, a trip to the TMO context machine. Just a quick comment on the audio you're about to hear. We had some technical issues getting things wired up this first time around, so you'll notice a distinct echo during the interview. We'll get that cleaned up just as soon as we can. Joining me now is the ultimate Mac Observer, editor of TMO, and my boss, Brian Chaffin. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ricky. It's great to be here. Looking forward to being part of the TMO Context Machine.
Cheers. Well, first off, let's talk about Steve Jobs as an individual. Does this deal in some way make him more or less powerful? Does it change his position in the entertainment industry?
Well, it certainly changes his position in the industry. The fact is, the most direct thing is that Steve Jobs, CEO of Pixar, is a pretty big deal because everybody wanted to get a piece of Pixar. Disney wanted a piece of Pixar. Pixar was, you know, at least making noises about talking to other folks about carrying Pixar movies. Steve basically was the gateway through which all Pixar films and all the monies that could be derived from those films flowed. With Pixar now becoming a part of Disney and Steve Jobs merely being on Disney's board, he no longer controls that gateway. And, you know, that certainly changes any direct power he has in regards to Pixar.
And his power at Pixar was really, it was total power before, right? He owned the company.
Yeah, well, I think he was something around 60% of all the stock. What he said when? It was definitely a public company. He's certainly beholden to the shareholders, but since he can outvote all the other shareholders himself, and yeah, he was the guy at Pixar.
So now his investor position has changed. He now owns a ton of stock in Disney. Apparently, he's the single biggest individual investor in Disney. Does that carry with it some influence?
Well, certainly it will carry a lot of influence within Disney itself, which can shape, possibly at least, shape Disney's direction and Disney's future. But Steve can't negotiate on behalf of Disney unless Disney gives him that power to do so.
Right.
So, in other words, the big difference between what's happening or what was happening at Pixar and what would be happening at Disney is that Steve's word was law. Now, Disney could say, Steve, can you help us strike a deal with such and such a company over such and such? And, you know, Steve could say yes or no. And in that way, he would have negotiating power. But other than that, he doesn't have any negotiating power at all, and unless Disney gives it to him.
And part of that, presumably, is his position on the Disney board. Do you think that, and of course, it's very difficult for us to know this one way or another, do you think it's reasonable that that position on the board will grant him a lot of access and power within Disney?
It certainly could. If I was Bob Iger, I don't know that I would want Steve Jobs looking over my shoulder in a direct participation level, because, you know, the last time that actually happened
was when Steve Jobs returned to Apple.
Yeah, it's when and how Steve Jobs returned to Apple. So, but
now that kind of suggests that Steve Jobs might have an interest in being CEO of Disney. Do you think that that's true?
Lots of people have suggested that. I was actually, when I was doing research on the article that I wrote for TMO's coverage of the actual deal, I stumbled on the Motley Fool column that was suggesting that Steve could be the number two choice behind Bob Iger for the job. I don't know that Steve Jobs would want that kind of job. I think that he liked being... Actually, let's back up a little bit, because let's look at his role at Pixar. He was CEO of Pixar, but it was Ed Catmull that ran the day-to-day operations of the company, and it's John Lasseter who is the creative genius. Those two guys were the crown jewels, as I said in our coverage. Those two guys were the crown jewels of the company in terms of actually getting the output that Pixar could that was making. Steve's role at the company was, for many years, it was to basically sign the checks and you know, decide on some of the things that Pixar was going to be doing. But he really became much more involved in the company when it came to the point of the company being able to negotiate, because he was the one who was doing the negotiations with Disney. He was the one that struck the deal with Disney. He was the one that decided what he wanted from Disney.
So he has you're saying he has more of an interest as a deal maker than he does as a sort of day-to-day operations commander of a place like Pixar or even Disney.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look at what Disney does. Disney is theme parks. Disney is movies. Disney is the animation. You know, Disney is the products that are made. You know, the merchandising, the TV shows, the networks. I mean, you know, on and on and on and on and on. When you listen to Steve Jobs talking about what was great about working at Pixar, it was the idea of making films that will last forever. He said something to the effect of, and I don't remember the exact quote, but something to the effect of, you know, who's going to remember the Macintosh in 100 years, but, you know, everyone's going to remember Snow White.
Right.
Or everyone's going to remember Toy Story. He wanted to be involved in a company that was making those kinds of products. I don't really think he would have too much interest in running Disney. Of course, I mean, you know, I'm that's pure conjecture on my part, but I don't think that's really going to happen. I think that his heart and soul, rightly or wrongly, is at Apple Computer.
Fair enough. And one more question. People that have tracked the Pixar-Disney story, it's pretty clear why Disney would want to buy Pixar. I mean, Disney's most successful animated films have all come out of Pixar. What's in this deal for Pixar?
Well, the big thing that's in it for Pixar is for the shareholders, because the shareholders are getting 2.3 shares of Disney for every one share of Pixar that they owned. I think that this deal probably first and foremost came about for and by the shareholders. Now, again, that's largely Steve Jobs, but, you know, all the shareholders certainly benefit. I think Steve Jobs has always taken his role as caretaker of the shareholder interest very, very, very seriously. So, you know, the smaller question of what's in it for Pixar, the aspect of the company that makes movies, not too much except for the, you know, greater access to the Disney name, possibly better resources. For Ed Catmull and John Lasseter, what's in it directly for them is now the power to shape a much larger company than they had shaped. If you look at what Disney's put out in the last 10 years, most of their movies have stunk. Most of their animations have certainly stunk. And, you know, all the vast majority of their profits from animated movies have all come from Pixar. Well, now these two incredibly talented men are going to be able to shape that direction. I think, you know, once they're firmly in charge, I don't think we're going to have any more bad, or at least I'd like to think, we're not going to have any more bad Disney movies come out. So, you know, that's certainly in it for them.
All right, so let's move on and talk a little bit about some of these music stories about iTunes competitors. The first story that we talked about this week was Creative and the fact that its profits dropped, even though its revenue increased. Is there any reason to believe that this is part of a larger trend for Creative? Is Creative on the path to death right now?
I don't think Creative's on its path to death by any means. I mean, certainly the company could end up choking at some point in the future, but it's still a fairly large company, you know, and it's still pushing around quite a bit of money. Its profits might have fallen, but, you know, we're looking at one particular quarter. I mean, it's still a billion-dollar company. Billion-dollar companies tend to be fairly healthy. Personally, the last thing I'd ever want to see is that Apple have 100% of the market of any particular market. I think that the competition is a very good thing, and I think that it's important for companies like Creative to be out there keeping Apple on its toes. But, you know, by and large, like I said, this is still a billion-dollar-a-year company, and I think that they're doing quite well.
And I suppose it's also worth pointing out that Creative makes a lot of things other than MP3 players.
This is true.
So another question, I mean, as Mac observers, the people that listen to this show probably already have plenty of reasons why they think that the iPod is the best in the world. Do you see any arguments for Creative having an upper hand in some part of the MP3 player battle? I mean, is there anything going for Creative in this industry?
Well, let me kind of actually answer that question the opposite of what you actually asked. The biggest thing that Creative has going against it is its ties with Microsoft and its use of the Windows Media Player. I personally think that Creative would be a lot better actually working on its own solution Its own software, its own interface, and doing all these things by itself, and not worrying about the Windows Media format. If the company could develop a solution that worked and worked really well, it would possibly be on better footing. Creative is effectively the smaller company, which means that they should, in fact, be able to be more nimble. I think that and by more nimble, I mean more nimble than Apple. I think that we've seen that in that the company does release more products. It has a faster cycle for many things. They've brought a lot of features to the digital media player space that Apple has been very slow to bring. And, you know, those things are appealing to some people. I'm sure that there are people who have bought Creative's product because it does support, and I know I'm arguing it's myself here, but not only because it supports subscription download services and whatnot, but because there's a built-in tuner, because maybe there's a built-in camera, or there's a built-in this or a built-in that most people don't care about those things is obvious, but that some people do is also obvious.
Yeah. Now, stepping back for a second, it sounded like you were arguing that you think the only way for anyone to succeed fighting Apple in the digital portable digital media marketplace is to create a fully integrated solution the way the iPod and iTunes are integrated.
Well, I think that's the only way that anyone's going to be able to make something that works. And by that, I mean that just works. You know, the iPod just works. iTunes just works, even on the Windows side. The problems have been relatively few and far between, even on the Windows side. And people want something that just works. Now, there are a lot of other components, a lot of other aspects that have gone into Apple's success in the space. There's the fact that their marketing has been, you know, absolutely fantastic. And there's also the huge aspect of the fact that the iPod is the easiest to use player out there. No one else has come anywhere close to Apple in terms of making a user interface for the actual device that works anywhere near as well as what the iPod does. That's also a very important aspect of this, but that controlling the whole widget thing that only Apple does, I think, is and has been and will continue to be an asset to Apple.
Now, when we talk about the whole widget, one of the other stories from this week that looks a lot like that is this talk about a Microsoft Xbox-branded portable digital media device that plays movies, lets you play games, and lets you listen to music. It sounds like Microsoft might have some interest in creating that sort of soup to nuts kind of product. Do you think that has any possibilities?
I mean, the short version is that I think that Microsoft will botch it. The second version is that only they really have a chance of offering the same kind of end-to-end solution that Apple can do, because they can provide the software, they can provide the media format, they can do basically every aspect of it. So they do certainly have a chance of being able to match Apple's It Just Works success. But it seems like the company, even in envisioning whether the feasibility of such a product, is starting off on the wrong foot, because they want to make it an Xbox product and they want to maybe make it play games. Well, that's stupid. As I put in the spin that we did on this for Friday, the point is the iPod is still first and foremost a music playing device. You know, watching videos, you can do. Looking at images, you can do. But it still works as a music player first and foremost. So can Microsoft do that? They could. They certainly have all the tools that they need to do it. But first of all, I think that they'll do it poorly. And second of all, they're going to do so at the expense of all, or most, if not all, of their third-party partner developers.
That seems likely. And it's also probably worth pointing out that and a number of our readers said this at the site and elsewhere, that it looks an awful lot like an Xbox-branded device would look a lot like a PlayStation Portable, and perhaps would compete more with that than with the iPod or with the MP3 players out there.
That's absolutely the case. I mean, the kind of product that he is describing is a competitor to the PlayStation Portable. It's not kind of, it's not, it sort of is, it's not it more, you know, it's more like it. It just is. It would be an Xbox Portable, and people are going to think of it in those terms, which means that it's going to end up taking market share away from Sony and not from Apple.
And that'll have to be the last word. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, Ricky. It's great to be part of the Context Machine, and look forward to our next interview.
Cheers. If you have questions about the news, send it to roundup@macobserver.com, and I'll track down the writers best equipped to answer them. How much context can you handle? All right. Yeah. Context Machine. And as per usual, we'll do a quick product roundup. Macware announced the immediate availability of Logo Design Studio for the Mac on Thursday. The application helps you design company logos. It is priced at $40 US. QuickerTech on Monday introduced a new transceiver for 17-inch iMac G5 computers, enabling users to pick up wireless routers from up to a mile away. Pricing is $200. Barebone Software on Monday released Yojimbo, a new information organizer that can manage personal data even when it's stored across multiple Macs. Pricing is $40 US for a single license, $30 for educational users, or $70 for a family pack that contains up to 5 licenses. In gaming news, Caravel Games released Drod Perfection, an expansion pack for its Drod Journey to Rooted Hold game. That was on Tuesday. The expansion pack builds on the game theme, where you play a dungeon exterminator, whatever that means. Drod Perfection requires a $12 per year CaravelNet membership. Vendor Nation announced on Tuesday that Notenix will begin shipping on January 27th. Notenix is a children's game that promotes healthy eating and a healthy lifestyle. Notenix is priced at $30. Aspire Media announced on Monday that it is developing The Sims 2 Nightlife expansion pack for the Mac. The Sims 2 Nightlife should be shipping in March and will be available for pre-order soon. And finally, Misha Sakhlaropoulou reviews the jacket for iPod and Small Dog Electronics iPod Nano leather flip case. Finally, for this week's diversions. Vern Seward drives a Mini Cooper to a date with Steve Jobs. Ted Landau identifies some points to consider before you buy an Intel Mac. John Keat, in his Devil's Advocate column, takes a look at two different Apple patent filings, one for a camera integrated into a computer monitor called Looking Glass, and for another patent for a resolution-independent user interface. Perhaps we'll have to fire up the Context Machine sometime in the future for a conversation with John about what patent filings mean and what impact they have. Maybe we'll do that sometime in the future. And I launch a new and improved weekly roundup with the TMO Context Machine. We hope you like the addition. Some reminders, just in case you forgot. Vote at Podcast Alley. Review the show on iTunes. We'd love to see all that stuff. Send questions for the TMO staff or any ideas you might have for future subjects for the Context Machine. Just giving us the cannon fodder. You can send them to roundup@macobserver.com. Dear listeners, I am lost without you. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the weekly roundup. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO. And don't miss TMO to Go's other podcast, The Mac Geek Gab, with Dave Hamilton and John Braun. Stay subscribed, everyone, and until next week, we'll see you online.